So variants. So the, getting a little ahead of ourselves, the types of regulations that a government will adopt will require, you know, lots, access, setbacks, the types of regulations that we're dealing with. And if you comply with those regulations, your plat is entitled to be approved. And if you don't comply with those regulations, well, you're going to be disapproved, or you can request a variance, which is discretionary approval by the local planning commission that shows that if you're forced to follow the literal wording of the regulation, it will impose a hardship. It will result in potentially an unconstitutional infringement on your property rights. And variances are, they exist to be constitutional safeguards against the regulations that a government may impose on any type of permit for land development. And so if the actual regulations require you to lose valuable property rights in a manner that approaches actual hardship, you may be entitled to actual compensation and a takings claim, which is why the variance process exists. And so we have rules, we regulate land registration, land subdivision, and sometimes when we find that the rules are a little too strict on a particular piece of land, because for a variety of reasons, we can allow for variances. The extraterritorial jurisdiction is a concept that perhaps not everybody deals with a lot, but the ETJ, extraterritorial jurisdiction, is the area outside of city limits where the city still has some limited regulatory authority. And the size of that area depends entirely on the population. There's a chart on the slide, but Houston has a 5-mile ETJ, and it can be extended even further through things like limited purpose annexation. And the point here is just to say that cities do have subdivision planning authority in their ETJ, the understanding always being that one day the city could annex this land. It makes sense that this land would be subdivided, and the initial development of this land would be regulated in a way that makes sense for the city once they annex the land, that it'd be already be developed according to certain basic standards. When we deal with applicants for a plat, and really it is something you apply for, it's like a permit to subdivide your property. Anybody can do it. And typically applicants for in a platting process are going to be civil engineers or surveyors or consultants, but really the person who plats the property is the owner. They're the ones who have to sign it. They're the ones who have to consent to the process. So development agreements are related to platting. They're regulated in the same chapter of the local government code where we find platting regulations, which is chapter 212 of the local government code. And development agreements are related to platting because they can often provide for the layout of things like streets and utilities and the construction of public infrastructure that's necessary for development, similar to the goals of platting. And they also are used to extend utilities to sites, defer annexation, which is becoming increasingly less useful as annexation law has changed so dramatically in the last few years. But really, it's also a tool for cities to extend those regulations into that less regulated area, the ETJ. And we'll talk about specific limitations on what cities can and can't do. Those development agreements without going into too much detail about them, they just are recorded agreements between property owners and local governments that provide for the development of the site. They are like a permit for purposes of vested rights, and you'll have a whole talk about vested rights later, but meaning it grandfathers your project into a regulatory scheme that begins with a plat, a development agreement, or some other type of governmental permit. Plat notes. This will make a little more sense in a minute. I'm going to show you a plat note, but on the face of the plat, we will write things like notices that certain regulations have to be complied with, independent covenants, and other just notations that let people know that when this property was subdivided and registered with the government made certain notes of that typically relate to how it will be developed. And so we don't have a good definition of what a plat note is, and it, and we can, you know, and lawyers can disagree about whether something written on the face of the plat constitutes an actual plat note. But again, the vested rights statute, chapter 245, of the local government code that we just talked about, references the existence of plat notes, and it lets permit holders take advantage of plat notes that are in their chain of permits that are all grandfathered under a certain regulatory scheme. There was a case like this, City of Austin versus Garza, where the plat note said, and this is the plat note right here in quotes that was written on the face of the plat, that the subdivision is going to be developed in accordance with a specific set of City of Austin regulations. And that ended, and even, and that recognized a certain grandfathered status of the development, and that plat note was enforceable against the city, even though it was just written on the face of the plat. The plat is recorded. It is a record of regulations that were imposed when the property was subdivided. Plats and replats can be amended when we take a platted piece of property and we plat over it. And that's...